Political polling is a phenomenon that does more to undermine democracy than enhance it. So argues Samuel Earle in his review of a book by G. Eliot Morris called Strength in Numbers, How Polls Work and Why We Need Them. Morris is an unapologetic cheerleader for political polling. Samuel Earle has a lot of issues with that. His review of Morris's work appeared in the New York Review of Books on October 17th of this year, and a link to the full article is posted on KBOO.fm. This morning, as the Moles Well Read read, I'm going to read excerpts from the first part of the review. Next week, I'll read his analysis of polling's mutually self-serving relationship to the press. Here's Samuel Earle. In 2008, Nate Silver, a 30-year-old sports journalist, became an overnight celebrity after predicting Barack Obama's election victory with uncanny accuracy, calling 49 of 50 states correctly. His method was to aggregate multiple polls, weight them based on various factors, and then subject them to the kind of statistical analysis used to evaluate the performance of baseball players. In the 2012 presidential election, Silver picked the winner in all 50 states. The New Republic declared that it was 1936 all over again, a reference to the year when pollsters like George Gallup and Elmo Roper predicted Franklin D. Roosevelt's victory, upstaging more old-fashioned election forecasts that he would lose. Their innovation was the sample survey, gathering responses from a group of people deemed representative of the entire population. Silver's innovation was to bring the sample survey into the age of big data. The excitement of 2012 proved short-lived. In the 2016 election, polls were ubiquitous, but Donald Trump defied almost all their predictions and won the presidency. Worse than that, the polls were accused of enabling his victory by creating a fog of complacency that inadvertently sank Hillary Clinton's candidacy. Then in 2020, after concerted efforts by polling to correct previous mistakes, the polls ended up being more inaccurate than at any time since 1980. In his book, the journalist and data scientist G. Eliot Morris sets out to defend the polling industry. He argues that the real problem is the public's and the press's misunderstandings of how they work. Morris's bullishness is typical of the polling industry, a reflex that shields it from facing knottier questions about polling's political and social usefulness. To many, the point of it seems self-evident. Political polls measure political opinion, and every democracy should want its leaders to know what the public thinks. But that obscures their greatest achievement and larger influence, which lies in the industry's complete co-option of our understanding of public opinion. It has always been an elusive concept. In 1888, the British liberal politician James Bryce asked, "How does this vague, fluctuating, complex thing we call public opinion express itself in America?" A half century later, George Gallup announced that he had found the answer: polling with sample surveys. But polling's claims of accuracy veiled an intrinsic deception. It was all too easy to forget how reality is framed and flattened by the medium's design. Following their success in 1936, Gallup and his fellow pollsters promised that polling would revolutionize not only our understanding of public opinion, but democracy itself. Thanks to their new instrument, Gallup wrote, the will of the majority of citizens can be ascertained at all times, ensuring that dictatorships will become mere boogie stories to frighten our great-grandchildren. Gallup and Roper did not invent the sample survey. They imported it from the increasingly professionalized field of market research. It is hard to determine whether advancing democracy was an honest goal or simply part of their marketing spiel, but it's clear they thought that political polling would make them rich, said Roper. I saw it as a veritable gold mine if we could learn fast enough how to use it in all of its ramifications. But these early pollsters preferred to ground the industry's origin story in the scientific method rather than the profit motive. Some of polling's problems are indeed typical of the natural sciences. supposedly objective methods were and still are suffused with the prejudices of their day, creating blind spots and distortions that only become clear in hindsight. Such problems persist. One explanation for polling's failure to predict Trump's win in 2016 is that college graduates who were more likely to favor Clinton were overrepresented among respondents. In addition, the results of any poll on a particular issue or candidate are liable to change how people think about that issue or candidate. The effects are unpredictable. Add to this respondents' hypersensitivity toward the wording of questions. Roper once quipped that you can ask a question in such a way as to get any answer you want. But the most fundamental problem with polling is that the phenomenon it claims to record, public opinion, has no coherent meaning or existence. The polling industry resolves this conundrum by simply making public opinion synonymous with its methods. Polls record public opinion. Public opinion is what polls record. Skeptics could see this sleight of hand from the start. Dr. Gallup does not make the public more articulate, Lindsay Rogers, a political scientist, wrote. He only estimates how in replying to certain questions it would say yes or no or don't know. Polling in this analysis was not so much an infant science as an infantilizing one. One of the oldest and most ambiguous concepts in the social sciences was reduced to a simple percentage. 60% think this, 40% think that. The conceits of such a percentage have been exposed by many researchers. In an experiment conducted in 1980, people were asked whether they thought the 1975 Public Affairs Act should be repealed. A third gave an opinion, even though the act does not exist. A follow-up study in 1995 found that when people were told that either President Clinton or the Republicans wanted to repeal the act, more than half of respondents had a view. Morris's book is filled with fighting talk. Whatever the doubters say, polls remain, he says, one of the most democratizing forces in American political history. Morris even suggests that critics of polling are enemies of democracy, arguing, in many cases, the denigration of polls is made by elites, elected officials, and the ideological activists who have a stake in the public's voice not being heard. That was part one of a reading of a book review by Samuel Earle titled The Problem with Polls, published October 17 in the New York Review of Books. Next week, I'll be back with Earle's conclusions about the self-serving relationship between polls and the press. I'm Patricia Kohlberg for the Old Mole Variety Hour.